Exodus chapter 15, the Song of Moses. I was hoping Levi and I talked on the phone for an hour and a half last night about singing. So I was hoping he would be here this morning, but he's doing the kid thing, huh? So, because it's an important, yeah. Because this is a, there's some really good stuff in this. Exodus chapter 15, the song, you know, last week we talked about the Red Sea and how God parted the Red Sea and then he closed it in and killed all the horses and the chariots and singing. They came up with a song. I was trying to think of how logistically they did that, how quickly or who wrote it or how they learned it. There's a fair amount, not necessarily. So, Miriam did her own song and dance and her tambourine and did it. That's good. But I'm not sure exactly. But there's speculation it was written during the Kingdom Age. I don't think that's just true. But it's a great and powerful, song. It's actually regarded as some of the best Hebrew poetic song stuff in the Bible. That's why people speculate, oh, those people coming out of Egypt couldn't have written that, you know, doing it. So it's actually highly regarded as one of the greatest pieces of, I don't know what you would call it, you know, it's not really poetry. It's some Hebrew thing they do, you know, some kind of chanting thing. So here we are. One thing that hit me about it is the whole singing thing. You know, there's nobody that, you know, church as we know it in the Western world, and I would contend probably all over the country, is you come in and you sing and then somebody pontificates up here in front or whatever you're going to do, you know. And singing is very much a part of what we do and something we're very familiar with. But why and what are we doing? You know, it's a very, you know, I know some, I could go on the whole day about some amazing worship leaders that are absolutely full of crap in their lives and what they're doing and what's happening and, you know, what does that mean? What does that look like? But singing is a pretty amazing thing. You realize that there's over 400 verses in the Bible about singing. And there's like 50 commands to sing. 50 commands to sing. I kind of need to hear that because honestly, group singing is not my thing. You know? I don't really even like doing it. So, it's just, you know, it's not a matter of rebellion. It's just, some people love to sing. Some people love to sing in groups. I don't. So what does that look like? What does that mean? What do we hear? What are we doing when we sing? Because I think it's something that is important. Are we just saying grace before we eat? You know, I would be somewhat of the impression that if, much like saying grace before you eat, my challenge has always been, well, you've got to be thankful for your food. And my rebuttal would be, well, you know what? You realize that about 99% of that is a religious act. Not necessarily grateful, but there's something you're conditioned to do. And how do I know? I know that. I'll challenge all of you. So if you're really thankful, then pray after you're done. Let's be honest and tell me how many times you remember to do that. And when we really should be thankful is when our bellies are full, right? oh man, I'm so thankful. But somehow we don't remember to pray. I know, because I've done it in my own life. You know, doing it. So is it wrong to be thankful for food? Absolutely not. I think that it's we're to be thankful in all things. You know, we should tremendously be thankful for provision. We're a bunch of spoiled brats in this country. But is it something that we do that really has purpose and meaning, or is it a religious act that we participate in? The worst one is when you have to make sure that you need to make a scene in public and do it. That pisses me off, you know, doing it for the most part. Because typically it's just a religious, self-righteous thing of I want to make sure in public that I make a scene here that I'm a Christian. And then you tip bad, you know? You got to be beat, you know? Right? Or criticize the food, or be a complainer or a whiner, you know? But it makes it all up for, because I prayed before we ate, you know, public. I was willing to pray before I ate. You know, I just want to punch in the face, you know, pray before you eat. And make a public spectacle of this. Is it something we should be ashamed or hide, that we're thankful to God? Yeah, but is it really real? Same thing in worship, okay? I would contend that if we decided we're going to sing after this Yehu comes up here and teaches something, most of us be fidgety as heck and start wanting to leave and get up and go. You know? We wouldn't want to sit there for 15 minutes after teaching. Man, it's time to go. You know, what are we doing? We'd be disgruntled, and what are we doing? So what are we, what is about? I challenge myself, but I'm challenged by it. But I'm challenged, I think all of us should consider, what are we doing? There's 50 commands to sing in the Bible that I could find. And it's kind of weird, right? I mean, do not murder, but sing! You know? Honor your mother and father, but sing! You know? Do not lie, but sing! You know, those who go together, I mean, there's a bunch of commands to sing. Commands to sing. You know, God happens to know how we're made, and there is some psychology involved, you know, in it. But the baseline of commands that God gives us, the one thing that we have to realize, and I think this is a very true thing, commands, we often think of commands as things that are given to make us good, acceptable, good religious people, or because God doesn't like certain things, you know. I mean, it's, you know, it's amazing that he didn't give us a commandment not to eat lima beans or something, right? You know, because it just must be God's preferences about things or something. But the thing that we can be assured of is that every command is in the Bible is there to show us who God is and to lead us to be the people that God made us to be. Every command in the Bible is there for His glory and for our joy and our good. So, every command is given. The command to sing is there to lead us to be the people that God has called us to be. They're not there just because God is a prude or God is religious or God has these standards that He wants to set up because He's a rule maker. They're very, very purposeful. So when God gives us the command to sing, what does that look like? What does that look like for somebody? I mean, some people don't need a command to sing. They just want to sing, you know. But it is, I would contend, the thing to remember, that the thing to keep in mind is singing is not about us performing, but it's about us receiving. Singing, psychologically, singing corporately, understood psychology, that singing corporately has positive effects. It strengthens the immune system. Okay? Group singing is a natural antidepressant. What are you guys laughing at it there? It releases endorphins and oxytocins. The singing, it kind of frustrates me and makes me mad, but it's supposed to do those things. Okay? That's what it does. Group singing, it produces positive, physiological effects on us. And again, singing is about us receiving the way, and God designed it that way. We tend to think it's big of us to sing praise to God. I mean, it is about worship. How do you produce that? How does somebody walk in the door when your week hasn't been worship? Your week hasn't been about worship. Your week hasn't, that's not what it's looked like. And you come in and in a 10-minute period, all of a sudden you go from 0 to 100, you know, or whatever. That now you're worshiping God. I find that to be tough. You know, we get very comfortable and feel good about ourselves and things. It's somewhat like communion. We talked about communion a couple weeks ago. A little bit in talking about remembrances. And, you know, the question we ask, why don't we do communion? Is communion a good thing? The Lord's Supper is a good thing. And communion is a good thing. Done correctly. Done as a religious act, I think it has far greater negative effect. And the reason that I would say, do I really personally as a leader, as a shepherd, want to get to the point where we can participate in communion correctly? Mm-hmm. Will that happen in this country naturally? No. In fact, it'll happen absolutely unnaturally. Communion is something that if you're raised in the church, you're raised around the church, or you're around those people, even walking in. When you come in, all of a sudden this is, this holy, we're doing this communion thing. And are you mocking? No, I'm not mocking. But I am calling it blasphemy the way the Catholic Church has participated in communion. And I would contend that everything since then has been somewhat Catholic light. The communion that Jesus set it at the table, it was a remembrance of why we have this intimate fellowship of believers. It's because of the blood shed by Jesus in his body that he gave up for us. Yet we make it about sin and confession of sin. I mean, I grew up in conservative, theologically correct, conservative evangelicalism. You know, there was very little, quote, Catholic, you might say. But as far as I'm concerned, it was pretty sick. You know, I mean, we did communion on a monthly basis, you know. But, you know, you can remember, you're sitting there in the aisle and the ushers are walking by with the tray, you know, doing it, and, you know, David, you're going to take it. You realize if you do this, and there's unconfessed sin in your life, you're going to get sick. I mean, some of you younger guys, people are going, what are you talking about? That's what I'm talking about. Right? Right? And you, I mean, the peer pressure, he's going to tell my dad I didn't take communion, but what, I don't want to get sick, man, doing it. What am I going to do? I mean, it's a perverse thing. Where did we come up with this confession of sin thing that's tied in with it? Catholic, you know? It is not about, that is not what communion was about. It was about a celebration of remembrance, that the reason for our intimacy. And yet, I would contend that the way that communion is participated in does everything about non-intimacy, right? All of you sit there now, bow your head. Get alone with God right here and make sure there's no unconfessed sin in your life. There's no community or participation in this. I would encourage you, confess your sin before you walk through that door. Please don't show up in here in rebellion. And if you do, okay, let's be about it. But, you know, it isn't to wait for communion so I can confess my sin and have my sins forgiven when I participate and take communion. It does. And all of us who have ever participated around it have some baggage. I really hope that when we do communion, there's kind of a, oh crap, what am I doing? What is this about? Good. I hope that there's a bit of thought about what are we doing here? What are we participating in? Truth is, how different is the singing? This is supposed to be the worship of God, right? I find myself, and, you know, I would contend that there's a whole lot of words coming out of your mouth while your mind is in Twin Falls or something, you know, or thinking about the football game at the end of the day or what's happening somewhere else while your words are coming out of your mouth. No, I'm sure none of you are like that, right? All of you are 100% focused on what's this happening. What are we doing? Is it a, it should be a challenge, I think, to all of us to not participate in rote religious ceremony, because our hearts get very hardened when we do that pretty easily. You know, it's, again, it's like saying prayer. I mean, I grew up in a generation where you said grace before you ate. You know, I think the most pathetic expression was a bunch of glutton, salivating, sick, fat people waiting to eat potluck, right? I mean, I'm sorry. It was disgusting to me. You know, but let's pray that God will bless this food to my fat belly and add to it or what? You know, you grew up in it. I mean, it's just a, you know, while people are going, I can't wait to eat. Hurry up and say grace so we can eat. You know? What are we doing? What are we participating? I know, you're pretty cynical today, aren't you, David? I'm sorry. I don't mean to be cynical. I just think that it is, oh yeah, I do. But I think that it is important to consider why I don't want to participate in religious things that don't have value. Again, in fact, have value towards self-righteousness. What are we teaching our children? What are our kids doing? You know, we're outnumbered here most days, right? What are we teaching them? You know, what are we teaching them? You know, the challenge should be to all of us. You know, are we worshipers of the true and living God? And then we get this tremendous opportunity to come together and to worship corporately together with the benefits that happen from it. But this is something that is part of our lives and what we're doing. And those who it isn't, they come in and they look and go, wow, what is going on here? You know, this isn't just a religious sermon. I mean, there's a lot of loud, amazing singing. I mean, I grew up with big organs. Right? Big pianos. Big loud noise. I mean, by the time we left our church, I mean, there was a full orchestra. You know, like 20 or 30 piece orchestra or something, you know, playing at the same time. Full choir, you know, 40 people, you know, that could sing, you know, doing it. I mean, this is, alright, you know, this can be good. Is it good? You know, is this honoring to God? There is tremendous value in singing. God made us to sing, and God commands us to sing. You know, it's an amazing thing. How many of you have been to a concert, to a really good concert from somebody that you like? Right? Pretty much everybody, I would think. You old people have not. What happened? I have been to pay for the concert. Now, every one of you in that concert, the first two licks on their favorite song and you were singing, right? And everybody's singing. Right? And everybody's not only singing, everybody's hands up, and everybody, you know, this used to be something completely contrary to church. Now that's what church looks like, right? Because we said, now that's worship. In our day, I mean, her mom got in great big trouble. You know, that's the way she was raised. And one of the last churches that her dad was an elder in, you know, for telling the pastor's son, the music leader, that you can't raise your hands when you're doing that. You know? Because when we were, you didn't raise your hands. You wouldn't think of raising your hands, right? Yeah, those were the loonies. Those are the charismatic ones down there. Now, you were raised with it, right? But you were raised with rock concerts, right? And the two, what is a rock concert? You know, I mean, we're talking about full-on pagan singing about completely blasphemous stuff to through the God. Yeah, you're moved and you're motivated. And you've got tens of thousands of people singing at the top of your lungs doing it. It's a godly thing. It's a worship thing. Well, it is a worship thing. It certainly has nothing to do with God. Right? But wholly inspired. And just because we put it in the context of now, we make our churches look like a rock concert because now we paint the ceilings black and we have a big band up front and we just have this big auditorium where we set a bunch of chairs up and no pews, none of that stuff, man. We can't have any of this religious stuff. And we're just going to have a church that looks like this. And so now everybody's singing all into it. Well, and we say it's a God. Well, I don't know. You know, is it? Is it really good? I mean, you motivated, you excited, you doing it because you've got the energy happening from the band? I don't know how many answers I have any intention of giving this morning, but I sure would like to create some questions. Okay? But what is it that we're doing? What is it that we're doing when we're singing? What is it that we come together on a Sunday morning that we're doing and how we participate in it? You know, Levi and I were talking last night because I think that, you know, what is his role as a leader? And to be quite honest, I think he's in his role sometimes. Okay? Because of lack of preparation. He leads like he does the rest of his life doing it. I'll just be the Pied Piper and my little tights run along. You guys are going to follow me, right? Well, no. You know? You need to kind of keep the same tempo to the song that we did last week or maybe for a few weeks so we know how that's going to go and maybe do it in a key that most of us can sing in. And, you know, just you're there to lead people to worship. It's not about you. It's about helping people lead us corporately in worship. And what are we doing? You know, I mean, some of the few best worship songs that we have are the ones that the few the kids know, you know, and the kids will start belting it out. Because there's not a lot of Peytons. I mean, Peyton is consumed. My wife said she was watching from the back 2 weeks ago. Reagan, I mean, yeah, not Peyton. Reagan was consumed in How Great Thou Art and was just belting it out and hands and doing the whole thing. You're feeling it, you know, right? On doing it. Not most kids aren't like that. Most kids much, they want the rock concert. They want to be driven a little bit more and what's happening with it, you know. You were raised with old hymns, so you stumble every time Levi sings them because his tempo's off and his pace is off and he doesn't start the right room. Okay. It's been like this for 100 years. What's the matter with you? We're not singing this, you know. It isn't about, I mean, it's not a joke. It's sacrificially true. He says, make a joyful noise to the Lord. It isn't about that you have, he gifted some and he didn't give some. Okay? That's the way it is. And that's God's deal. Some are gifted with singing. Not a lot we can do about it. Some aren't gifted with singing. Some can't even carry a note, you know, correctly or hear a note correctly or do it. That doesn't change. The commands are still the same to sing. The commands are still the same to sing. You know, one of the challenges I think that we have these days is you read through an old hymnal, there's a bunch of really good theology. You know, obviously from the right church, but you know, but there's a bunch of really sound theology and doctrine. Okay? That it's done in a complex form, you know, of no structure. I mean, why do most guys write it? I hate old hymns. Well, they're really complicated. Christmas songs, you know? God's really complicated. There's about 50 different chords in it or something, and I don't know how to play it. You know? I just want a 3-chord deal, you know? I can just... They were written in order to... Because I think that that's what's important. We talked about it with, you know, a year or so ago with Levi doing it. You know, he was very compelled. He had the same mentality about girls and their what they dress like on Sunday morning, you know. You can't wear the same clothes. I wore those last week, you know. Everybody will think ill of me, you know. Can't wear the same dress. I mean, maybe once every 2 months, but people think, that's lame. You wore that last week, you know. Like somebody's really going to notice, pardon me. Because they really don't on doing it. But he was the same way. We can't do the same song. You know, we can't just do the same song every week. I said, you need to do some of the same songs every week. Particularly with a bunch of kids. One of the most important things, I don't care about us stinking old people, the most important thing is imprinting in those children truths that they can sing in the shower when they're 30 years old. You know? Hymns that are powerful, words that are powerful. A lot of the modern stuff, I disdain. There's a lot of whiny prom songs to Jesus, you know, or something. Really? You're not going to sing that in the shower unless, you know. A man shouldn't sing that in the shower, put it that way, okay? It just shouldn't be, you know. But a mighty fortress is our God, you know. You know, or how great thou art, or trust and obey, or some sound theological song that are become part of our souls. And that should be what you're teaching the kids. And I mean, my most powerful probably time, because there came a point in my life when we just looked at the hymnals and made fun of them while we were in church, and never mind, we don't need to go there, the most powerful times learning the songs was back at, you know, in Coy Merritt, was back at the old church doing it and growing up. And I mean, you know, I learned, you know, we had the full, you know, quartet, barbershop quartet singers, you know, and music was kind of a big part. Big, you know, and a lot of it was pretty hokey and pretty corny, and from back then, at the time, I thought it was a little hokey doing it, and I was trying to, we had wood floors with theater seats and the whole thing, and I'd bring marbles and roll them down while I was going to see, you know, in the middle of this, and, you know, it was just, try to sneak up in the balcony, because there was a balcony part right there, and if you really had some stones, you'd make an airplane, okay, a paper airplane, and fly it off through the church, you know, because really high, great big auditorium doing it. But the good part is that those songs that we sang were imprinted in my soul. I mean, deep, strong, true theological songs that are there to sing and to remember and to be a remembrance of and to be obedient in worship and doing it. All of us on some, I don't know, maybe it's not true. I find myself even not being the corporate group singer, and I do have some hang-ups, you know, on it. From, you know, my brother was one of the better worship leaders around. He's still asked to do it and paid to do it, to go to camps and, you know, go to conferences and be the worship leader, and it's absolutely full of crap, you know. But he's very good at moving people and inspiring people to sing worship songs, and yet, is that what her life looks like every day? I mean, he started doing it when he was a little kid and became very good at it. I know a lot of those. I don't pick on my brother. I hate the system that did that to him. I hate the system that did that to him. What is the value that we have? You know, I'll tell you what. Even in the somewhat mismatched mix up of whiny prom songs and theological correct hymns that we sing, there's some of the most powerful words that are going to come out of your mouth about commitment, about honoring God for who he is, about giving God glory, about the blood of the cross, about things that are, I mean, some of the most powerful things that we say all week theologically are in those songs. You know, and what should that be for us? What is the purpose of that? And God commands us to sing. To come and sing, whether I like it or not. Okay? He tells us that we're to participate and we're to sing. So, I say that all, okay, to say here's this section of scripture, that's the Song of Moses, and it's, you know, it's something that is a song of remembrance and history and who God is. Speaks of the strength of God, speaks of how God responds to his enemies, speaks of his long suffering, you know, towards his enemies. Speaks that God is long, waits and waits, and is patient in his wrath, and withholds his wrath. But then when he finally, his wrath is released, his anger is released, it's ugly and it's swift. You know, it speaks of things that, about the character and nature of God that are true. There are songs that we sing and we should care about that. You know, we should care about the songs that we sing. We should care about what that is saying to the children. And I would say even more, what's really important is, as we sit here and sing these sometimes incredibly powerful, mighty songs, do our kids look around and go, is that how they live the rest of all 6.5 days? Do they really believe that about God? Do they really believe, you know, in God's awesomeness? Do they really believe in trusting and obey? Or are they complaining? Or they don't trust? Or they don't have faith? Or how do they live? Because, and I'm not saying, you know, honestly, we should be challenged by those words that are coming out of our mouth, but not calloused and not quiet. And I don't want you all shut your mouth. We're commanded to sing, okay? Well, I don't know if I can say that honestly. Well, be about it. What does this look like? You know, how much of effect does it have to transform our hearts? You know, how much does it have to release natural antidepressants? You know, it's a group thing doing it. How much does it have to give us some relief with the release of endorphins and oxytocins that counter things in our life, the way that things that our life, everyday life produces in it. I think we should recount the history of God. It is about remembrance. But it also isn't about us performing. It is about us receiving those things from God by being obedient and by verbalizing and recounting truths about him. So, all that said and done, the song of Moses, as this is called, chapter 15, verse 1. Then Moses and the sons of Israel sang this song to the Lord and said, I will sing to the Lord, for he is highly exalted. The horse and its rider he has hurled into the sea. The Lord is my strength and my song. He has become my salvation. This is my God, and I will praise him. My Father's God, and I will extol him. The Lord is a warrior. The Lord is his name. Pharaoh's chariots and his army he cast into the sea, and the choicest of his officers he drowned in the Red Sea. The deeps cover them. They went down to the depths like a stone. You'll have to excuse me. I'm going to try to, in the rest of this is I've spoken of this before, but for some reason when they did the very first New American Standard Bibles, and this one's 45 years old, been recovered and stuff a few times. I don't know if it's going to make it to the end. I was hoping it done, but sometimes it really makes me mad, like last night, so I might get another one anyway. So, because the New American Standard doesn't do it. The old New American Standard, when they first translated it, prayers, psalms, songs, they kept Elizabethan English. Okay? Why? Because that's God's language, of course, right? I don't know why they did it. I mean, they were very astute in their translation. I think it's one of the better literal translations there is. But they still did thy and thee and thou stuff, okay? And some people like Shakespeare. I happen to not, you know? So, you know, it doesn't inspire me to speak Elizabethan English. You know? We have played with it at times. We went to Renaissance Fair, yes. It was embarrassing, okay? Wasn't at the time. We were all good, you know? We were a little more hippie in this then still probably, and, you know, dressed up like old English, and it's a wild deal in Northern California, man. They've got this giant fair, and all these people living in villages like peasants and paupers and rich men and sword fighting, and we went because there was all kinds of crafts, you know, people that made things by hand and a lot of handmade stuff, and so my wife and I dressed up in such things. And don't show them. So it's all good. So you know, the truth is there was a tremendous amount of paganism even then doing it because, you know, I was speaking of it, you know, kind of almost in the Dark Ages, you know, in doing it. So nonetheless, maybe that's why I don't like Elizabethan English so much. Everybody was speaking in Elizabethan English, right? I mean, everybody was, you know, so... Excuse me, little rabbit trail. Is this part of it says, I'm going to try to translate it in human English, okay? So, the depths are covered with them, they went down to the depths like stone. Verse 6, your right hand, O Lord, is majestic in power. The difference, mine says, thy right hand, okay? So, that's where I'm hanging there. And your right hand, O Lord, shatters the enemy. And in the greatness of your excellence, you overthrow those who rise up against you. You do send forth your burning anger, and it consumes them like a chaff. And at the blast of your nostrils, the waters were piled up. The flowing waters stood up like a heap. The heaps were congealed in the heart of the sea, made firm so they could walk over. The depths were concealed. In the heart of the sea, the enemy said, I will pursue. I will divide the spoil. My desire shall be gratified against them. I will draw out my sword. My hand shall destroy them. You did blow with your wind, and the sea covered them. They sank like lead in the mighty waters. Who is like you among the gods, O Lord? Who is like you? Majestic in holiness, awesome in praises, working wonders. You did stretch out your right hand, and the earth swallowed them. In your loving kindness, you led the people whom you have redeemed. In your strength, you have guided them to the holy habitation. The people that have heard, they stumble. The people that have heard, and they tremble. Anguish has gripped the inhabitants of Philistia. When the chief of Edom were dismayed, the leaders of Moab trembling. The leaders of Moab trembling grips them. All the inhabitants of Canaan have melted away. Terror and dread fall upon them. But by the greatness of your arm, they are motionless as stone. Until your people pass over, Lord, until the people pass over whom you have purchased. You will bring them and plant them in the mountain of your inheritance. The place, O Lord, which you have made for your dwelling, the sanctuary, Lord, which thy hands have established, the Lord will reign forever and ever. I mean, that's a powerful song. Again, I'm not sure how politically correct it is. We're singing about God drowning our enemies in horses and really excited about such a thing, you know, doing it. But the truth is that there's, you know, we all should have, I would have to say, in spite of my confession of not by nature liking corporate singing, you know. When alone, there, you know, some of the greatest praise times I've ever had were music cranked in my truck driving somewhere and singing at the top of my lungs, you know, doing it. Just songs of thankfulness, songs of praise, songs of acknowledgement of who I am and who God is. And, you know, Third Day has that. Mac Powell has that ability to, kind of move. I'm not sure how good Mac, I don't know how much Third Day is really a corporate song to sing. Some of it's pretty tough to sing, but as a person doing a solo and getting it on and singing some powerful music, yeah. You know, I mean, there's some powerful stuff. All of us, I think, there is an outburst of singing and praise that happens when we are joyful, when we are thankful, when we are in remembrance. I mean, how much? What's the greatest inspiration of? It'd be called deja vu in us, you know. So oftentimes it's a song, right? I mean, the song that's impactive. I mean, we can hear two licks of a whatever generation you come from, a Beatles song or whatever it might be, you know exactly what it is, you know, right, John? I mean, that would be a little different. I don't know who it is in your guy's age, you know, wouldn't probably be that necessarily, but you right? And it instantly moves you. It not only brings back thoughts, it brings back feelings, right? I mean, you're just, you know, transported in that. It's a powerful, very powerful thing. The content of that is important. The content of those songs is very important. In fact, I would say to the point, I think it's very, we should be very careful how we're, I mean, it's been as a personal example in Journey in Life, it's been a very difficult thing with country music, because I love country music, okay? And there's nothing like a good love song. You know, I grew up with what I would consider to be a bunch of crap, you know, Led Zeppelin and Pink Floyd and a bunch of, it was terrible music. Absolutely horrendous music. Horrendous words straight from the pit of hell. Okay? Tell me different, you know? You know, we're going to talk about whatever. It just inspired by the demonic, wicked song that, you know, but the truth is, a lot of the beautiful love songs of country music are pretty wicked also. You know, I'm talking about immorality and talking about, you know, if you can't be with the one you love, love the one you're with, you know, or whatever it might be, okay? And I would contend that in my personal journey, I've had to be very careful. I think that it's wrong for me just to turn the radio on. Because to have, it's almost one of the more, I don't think there's too many things that are as programming, is having the ability to program your mind like music, in the words of music. So to listen to lies that are contrary to the truth of God in the form of a song that is very moving and stirring in your soul and goes into the positive category because I really like it. And I like the way it makes me feel, but yet the words are contrary to the thing of God. I don't think there's too many things more dangerous. I don't think there's too many things more dangerous because it gets categorized as right in spite of the fact that it's in rebellion to God. And I don't think that it's not just entertainment. That's one of the great lies of the 20th century, right? The entertainment's benign. No, entertainment is not benign. In fact, I don't think there's a more powerful thing. You know, it's why, you know, there's not a lot of secular rock concerts. You know, it's a dangerous place. And I would contend, it's like listening to country music on there. I better not sit there. I'm going to have a fight on my hands, okay? And it's not necessarily going to be pleasant for anyone else in the car with me, okay? Because I need to respond correctly to the brazen lies that are being spoken in such a wonderful way. You know, and to do anything different is to remain in rebellion to God. Remember, God cares about the actions, you know, what our boots do, You know, he cares about the act of sin, the outward act of sin. But you know what God really cares about? Your heart. And to not do something because it's a sin, and yet to hold on to the fact of, but I really want to, but I really like that, but I'd really like to, is to remain in rebellion. To disagree with God about sin is to remain in rebellion. And God doesn't care. You know what he calls that? He calls that a Pharisee. He says, on the outside, you look beautiful, whitewashed, you know, doing it. But on the inside, your heart is still rebellious towards me. And music is one of those amazing places, you know. The Eagles. I think for me, the Eagles are almost impossible to listen to. Now, some of you, that's a different age group, you know, doing it. But, you know, I've got a peaceful, easy feeling. Well, I'm naked with some girl in the desert tonight or doing drugs or doing whatever I'm doing. What are we talking about? And yet it's their music, like the Beatles, is powerfully moving, was at the time, right? The Beatles were seriously inspired to be that good and that powerful and have that strong of an effect. Not by God. I mean, their harmony, their quote, love songs. But it's about immorality and things that go completely contrary to God. Content does matter. Okay? It is about content. It does matter. You know, is there wicked kinds of music? Well, I don't know. My son and I might disagree on that, you know, on doing it. I would tend to think that extreme screamo hard rock is, I do not know how you can find that. I mean, if what's the matter with you? Right? What is the matter with you? There's something wrong. What are you so angry about, right? Well, I'm a pastor up here preaching in front, so it's godly, right? Really? At this point, I'm still agreeing to disagree. And, you know, there is a certain tempo, no matter what the words are, especially when you can't understand the words. In fact, I think that's one of the more dangerous aspects of rock and roll. That is one of the reasons I grew up disdaining most of rock and roll. That my Deep Purple or Led Zeppelin or whatever it was, there was so much. Our minds are much better than our ears, and it's amazing what the subconscious does here that we don't even recognize. The words matter. Content is everything. You know, again, it gets. We are not to be bound by our cultures, by our generations, okay? I mean, when we were young, it was an organ and a piano, right? Having a guitar on the stage was like, that was getting suspect. The youth group over there, they might do that because we want to appeal to those kids coming out of their 60s, you know, doing it. Drums? Nah, wait a minute. Those are from the devil. Literally, right? I mean, it was said. You know, those inspire things in you and create, you know, make you want to. Yeah, it was, and are they used in religious ceremony to drive people and fire people up, inspired and energized by the demonic? Yeah. And if you think not, you're a fool. But can they be used? Dancing in most places, not in our country, because we're a sad lot, you know, as Americans. I mean, we are very, you know, we're intellectually correct, you know. We come into church and want to be much more proper than that. We want to have proper doctrine and proper theology and feel proper about my relationship with God. And there's a side of that that is not more correct. Dancing has always been a religious expression in most every people except for us. Okay? Now, obviously, the vast majority, we're not worshiping God, right? But the vast majority of people who were using their intellect were not worshiping God either. Okay? That doesn't make it a safe place. Is it, Is it right to be determined and controlled by your emotions, by your flesh? No. Is it wrong for your emotions, for your being, for every part of your soul to worship God in conjunction? No. We could probably all benefit a little more from that, you know, doing it. But the problem is, one of the problems is in the transition, we begin to say, oh no, you can't say that music's bad. We can't say that, right? Because you're gonna isolate the kids, you know? Things changed radically. Went to, you know, kids' music, adults' music in the 60s. And there was the rock bands did not exist, okay? In fact, rock and roll was somewhat even suspect doing it. But then we found an acceptability of it's okay to be, you know, we need to be more open-minded. Content does matter. I just challenge all of us with that. I didn't intend to go this far down the rabbit trail, but it is a very important one when we're in music. Words matter. Okay? To sing a song or to let a song move you, and it's, you know, and you all know what I'm talking about, a song moving you. Anybody who doesn't, I need to come slap you, okay? Because songs should move you. Music should move you, okay? To let music move you, which has words in it that are contrary to the truth of God, is wickedness. Is wrong. I would contend it's no different than allowing myself to be overwhelmed and moved by another woman. You know? And it's adulterous towards God. When we are moved and allow ourselves to be taken away, inspired, feel good, aroused. I'm not even just talking sexually, but aroused, okay? By songs that are contrary to the truth of God. Because that is saying to God, no, you don't have the right understanding of this, God. This makes me feel really good. You know, what this says, what this talks about is a very romantic thing that just very much inspires me. Content does matter. And we should, with our kids, that's important. We should not have songs in our repertoire of things that inspire us that are theologically incorrect or unsound. That's dangerous. And background music is not benign either. Again, radio is a dangerous thing. Or a tape or a CD or, you know, 8-track, you know, whatever, okay? That is potentially incredibly dangerous to listen to that as background. Because it is programming us. It is inspiring us. It is putting into us, into the category of, I really like this, things that God hates and that are evil. So, you know, it doesn't mean that we all just need to relegate ourselves to old hymns. Okay? I never did like the organ much. Okay? I mean, the synthesizer was okay when Emerson, Lake, and Palmer did it, you know, or something. But, you know, that was kind of an electronic organ thing, you know, doing it. But music, and I would wonder, you know, is music without words, you know, is that good or bad? I think that's something to question. I guess, how does it go? I would say that, you know, screamo and techno, those are suspect. But other than that, you know, anyway, again, that's personal feeling. And it shouldn't be based on my culture or what I like. What is right and what is wrong? And I think that music, you know, it's amazing to me. I mean, classical stuff. You know, people say classical soothing. I think, what state of life do you exist in? I mean, classical was the Alice Cooper of the day, man. I mean, some classical is soothing. Some classical is the most driving music there is. I mean, Mozart was highly inspired, the boy was. I mean, his stuff is, yeah, okay, you know, and we're all wired different, so we have differences of, it's the contention that my sons and I have always had, you know. I am typically always about here, you know? I mean, that's just, I'm not hyper and, you know, I don't necessarily, I'm not on edge doing it, but I'm here. I don't, you know, it doesn't take much to go over the top, you know, doing it. My sons are, you know, inspired about here, you know? So lifting them up, getting them energized. You know, what takes me over the top takes them to some moderate level on doing it. So, right? I mean, it you know, that's okay. You know, that's okay, the difference in, I don't know what's right and wrong. I would contend, how does it move you? You know, I mean, there's some saxophone stuff that makes me feel very erotic towards my wife, you know, and as long as it moves me that way, it's a good thing, right? I mean, you know, there's some, what's that? Kenny G. My kids don't like Kenny G. You know, to me, Kenny G is, pretty powerful, you know. Yeah, but, you know, the sad part is, I mean, I don't know in my day that there's too much more, I don't know how you guys feel about this, but there's too much more strength and movement of music than Norah Jones. I mean, that girl is just unbelievable, but oh my gosh, she better be careful. Because is what she's thinking about, right? I haven't seen much of that. So that's a very dangerous thing, to be highly moved, because that music really moves me. I don't think there's a more exotic, erotic voice that I've heard in my lifetime than Norah Jones. I mean, it's incredibly passionate music. But she doesn't know Jesus. And the stuff she sings about is wrong, is immorality for the most part. Or the result of immorality, the hurt of immorality. You know, I mean, and sometimes that's, that has validity of a broken heart and a destroyed life because of a wrong relationship and a bad relationship. But, you know, for a melancholy person, there's a propensity to find comfort in that. That's a dangerous thing. To find comfort in evil and what is bad is always a very dangerous thing. So, music's not benign. Singing's not benign. How do we participate on a Sunday morning? I wish we were all here, because I think this is really important. Right? I think what are we doing? How are we participating in the encouragement of each other? Again, it isn't about me performing or any of you performing. There's very few of you I really want to hear overtly performing. But that's okay, okay? That is okay. It is about how are we participating together corporately in a way that honors God and in that obedience brings the things that God intended it to. Again, all His commandments, you know, all of His commandments that He gives us are a means of leading us towards becoming the people that He wants us to be. Eradicating things from our life and putting things into our life that cause us to be the people that He designed us to be for our good and for His glory. Okay? Singing's one of those. Music and recorded music's a fairly new thing. Okay? When you think about it in the history of man, you know, how long have we had record players or, you know, not that long, 100 years? I don't know, you know. You know, transistor radio. I mean, when I was a kid, the radio thing, I mean, a transistor radio from Japan, I was like, oh my gosh, you have music with you? You know? I mean, it was a different world that opened up where now we're opened up. It used to be, what was the music you heard? Sunday morning church. That's where you heard music, right? That's the only place you really heard music much. I mean, you might sing in a bar, you know? But most people went to Sunday morning church and, you know, but for the most part, I mean, it was vocals. It was produced. You know, there wasn't, it was, and you think, so we're talking in the history of man, this is a pretty new phenomenon. And to buy into the lie that entertainment is benign is a terribly dangerous thing. And to participate on Sunday morning on doing something because we're supposed to say grace before we eat. That's just what we do. And to, I'll be real honest with you. I mean, typically on Sunday mornings, I'm crying out to God, God, give me wisdom on what to say. What, you know, usually by the time Sunday morning gets here, I'm in big trouble. Because I could go on all day by that time. You know, I've been inspired, you know. It seems like by Saturday night, I'm going, there's so much to say, so much truth here that wants to be. And, you know, usually Sunday mornings, I'm sitting here trying to, okay, just simplify, make this here. So I'm fairly consumed in that usually. In the process, though, of also how do I participate in seeing some pretty unbelievably powerful things at times. And what are we doing when we come in? You know, again, I think it's important. God says that the contents of songs are huge. We haven't even talked about the content of these songs. And this is a very, there's some very powerful things in here. We started really late, didn't we? So, So I'm not going to get as far as I wanted to get. Obviously, because I was, what were you doing? What were you thinking anyway? Yanni grew up around music her whole life. Just good, bad, and ugly. Right? You know, it still is. You know, still is a big part of your life, good, bad, and ugly. You know, what is it that inspires what? And again, just because it's got Jesus on it or Christian on it, does not sanctify it. Does not make it holy. And I guess that wasn't the intention of where going, but I all of us should be challenged by that. Do we allow things to pleasure us that go contrary to God? Music falls in that category. I think it's stronger than anything else. I think music has that ability as strong as anything else. It's just a song. No, it's not just a song. You know, and that goes true of whiny prom songs of Jesus too. There's a lot of non-theologically correct, as far as I'm concerned, near blasphemous stuff done these days in the name of Jesus. Just because it has a Christian name on it. What's it projecting? What's it saying? You know, what is it encouraging? How is it correct? Does it sound theologically? You know, we can debate about is it good music or bad music? That's a different thing. And that is, I realize, somewhat subjective. And amazingly so, generational. You know, there's few people that transcend their generation by much. Most of us, we think that we're very individualistic and have our own views of music, and how come everybody else your age thinks the same thing? You know? We learn and we're inspired, influenced by parents, influenced by contemporary, influenced by the radio, influenced by whatever it might be, to like certain things, and then we tend to hold it as godly or ungodly or right or wrong, or I would be wrong to do that too, okay? You know, just like the generation before us was wrong to say drums are from the devil, and so is the electric guitar, by the way. Okay? Obviously not. You know, you look at it's a sweet thing in here, going on to the next chapter where, Aaron's sister, Moses' sister also, Miriam, right, grabs a tambourine And he tells all the other women to get a tambourine and let's dance. Let's sing this song that God drowned all the horses and all the men in the ocean, man. I mean, not a child song, but, you know, we was inspired to lead them in singing and praise. You know, I long for the day when non-fleshly, spirit-inspired, charismatic behavior happens, okay? I mean, I'm not, you know, is it wrong to raise your hands and praise to Jesus? No. Is it a conditioned response by most people who participate in that? Yeah, because this says I'm valid. Okay? This says it's real, you know. No, it doesn't. You know, you just did that when you watched Jimmy Buffett, you know, or whatever, you know. And it wasn't inspired by God. You didn't necessarily doing it. Wrong? No. You say the Bible says, lift up your hands in prayer. Oh, really? Show me that one. Because it doesn't. Oh, praise. It doesn't say lift up your hands. It says that men are to lift up holy hands in prayer. The only place it says lifting your hands, by the way, all of you who are just were in church in the last 20 years would think, that's a lie. The Bible is full of being told to lift your hands to God. No, it's not. Show me. Maybe I didn't read it or didn't see it. Wrong to do? Well, I'm not saying it's wrong to do. It's not wrong to skip either. Huh? It's not wrong to jump up and down in praise of God either. Probably more reference to that on doing it and lifting your hands. It says men are to come before God with holy hands in prayer. That's a big one. Okay? That's a big one. But I do not want to be limited by what does this look like? I mean, you know, we could look more like Calvary Chapel, and you know, but what is inspired? It's a very dangerous thing that we come in, and those who have seemed the most sincere are in the process of lifting their hands when they're singing, and teach those who come in that's what you're supposed to do, and that's what it's supposed to be about. And it's no different behavior than drums are from the devil, you know. Or praying something you eat so you don't get a stomach ache. You know, or God doesn't poison this food. Do bless this food to my body. Protect me. Keep it from being poisoned. I don't know. I mean, I can understand that if you were some things people have to eat in some places in the world. You know? Past expiration day, yeah. Something. You know. But we're not deep trouble there when it comes to our food for the most part doing it. You know, this, we need God to protect us in eating this sustenance that He's put before us. Most of us are, you know, keep us from getting too fat and having a heart attack, you know, doing it. Is it wrong to pray and be thankful? No. It says pray without ceasing. My contention is if you're really inspired, grateful to God for the food you have, you're probably going to be saying that prayer in the grocery store. You know? When you're there thanking God for filling up a stupid basket or something, you know? Full of food that you get to take home and eat and sustain you. And in the process of making it, and in the process of eating it, and in the process of being full and satiated by it. I'm not telling you how to be thankful to God for your food. I am discouraging religious, self-righteous praying before you eat. Okay? Because I think that is always a good habit. Really? Well, if you really meant it, it would be a good habit. If you kept it from just being a rote thing, it would be a good habit. Just like singing, right? How is it right to sing without reflecting on the magnitude of what you're singing? Trust and obey, for there's no other way to be happy in Jesus but to trust and obey. Do you realize what you just said? You know? Does it look like that all week? Is that what you've been doing? Is that what you're aspiring to? Is that, are you moved by, there's no other way but to trust and obey. Okay? Hugely powerful words. To sing that without flippantly is a very dangerous thing. Okay? How great thou art. I tend to sing how great you are because I'm rebellious against this. But, you know, that's a amazing thing, right? That happens to be a very well-written song that tends to be very inspirational and majestic, and it tends to inspire that kind of feeling, right? Unlike whiny prom songs, God doing it. But, you know, to take those things lightly and reciprocatingly, to take untruths and be moved by them, is a very dangerous thing. I would contend, and I'll leave it at this then, since I got nowhere with what I was supposed to teach about today. What's that?
Part
two. There's some really unbelievable stuff. I'll finish reading it and end with that. Prior to that, there is a very essential part of our religion would tell us that if we follow dogma and do things on the outside, don't cuss, don't chew, don't go with boys who do, you know, don't, as long as you're doing that, then you're righteous, right? That's what religious would say. We have dogma that we follow, and in following that dogma, then we're righteous before God. I would contend that that has nothing to do with what the Bible says. Jesus, though, not that it's right to do those things, but it's really important where it comes from. Does it come from a point of self-righteousness, or does it come from a heart that is obedient to God? To remain in love with sin is to remain in wickedness. Okay? For me to continue to find, like, you know, whatever song it might be that has this overwhelming deja vu, take me back to, inspire me, do whatever about illicit immorality. To allow that to be in my life and continue to move me in that way is to remain rebellious. God says we're to agree with Him about sin. That's what confession of our sin is. Confession and repentance is not white-knuckling it. Confession and repentance is agreeing with God about it and saying, God, change my heart. You mean I got to give up my favorite song? Yeah. Probably true for all of us. Okay? Because that favorite song was ingrained in us purposely by the enemy. Some of us, fortunately, weren't necessarily tainted by that. If our favorite song is songs that are about the truth of God, be about it. Be inspired. Be moved. Be motivated. But to allow ourselves to love evil is to remain in rebellion to God. So this whole journey that God's taking them on, and we'll talk about it some more next. This whole journey that God is taking them on is all for the purpose of turning this, you know, these are a quarrelsome, disorganized, faithless multitude of victims. What a mess. And God is shaping that into a nation to be called His people. And everything He does along this journey is for that purpose. This is what our lives look like, okay? God is purposely sanctifying us to make us holy. Because that's, for most of us, come out, we're quarrelsome, faithless victims. The enemy very purposely put us in that place and shaped and formed that character in that place. And everything God is doing is for the purpose of eradicating that nature and that character and forming us into the nature and character that would honor Him and give glory to Him. Now, this is very, very important because we need to look at the events in our lives as such. Not complain. Not why God. Not why are you doing this. But God, where are you taking me? What do you want to teach me on this journey? Again, God has a plan. He has a plan, He has a purpose, and His purpose, and He's always about it. Are we going to fight him in it? Are we going to resist him in it? Or are we going to look for the ways that he is changing us from being a victim to being an object of God's grace? To being a child of God's mercy? Are we going to move from being an independent, selfish, quarrelsome, immoral, faithless people to somebody that God changes into that? Now, I want to read a verse because this should inspire us. It's one of those, again, there's many of these in Exodus, and this is one of them at the end of this. We didn't finish, so let me finish the chapter. And then because the Moses, verse 22, then Moses led Israel from the Red Sea, and they went into the wilderness of Shur. And they went 3 days into the wilderness and found no water. And when they came to Marah, they could not drink the waters of Marah, for they were bitter. Therefore it was named Marah. Anybody have any question about the name Marah? Not a good name for your kid, okay? All right. So, what does it mean? You know? It means bitter, okay? So the people grumbled at Moses. What shall we drink? Then he cried out to the Lord, and the Lord showed him a tree, and he threw it into the waters, and the waters became sweet. Don't go off on some stupid rabbit trail of what kind of herbs can I put in the water to make them cleaner? This is a miracle of obedience, God says. This isn't about a certain kind of a tamarisk tree or whatever that was thrown into water that made it pure, okay? Because what does he say? He said, there he made for them a statute and a regulation, and there he tested them. That's what that was about. And he said, if you will, this should be a life verse, if you will give earnest heed to the voice of the Lord your God, and do what is right in his sight, and give ear to his commandments, and keep all his statutes, I will put none of these diseases on you which I have put on the Egyptians, for I, the Lord, am your healer. I want to leave you with this. I throw it out there. We've been sick a lot this year. What's the answer? You know, well, that's kind of woo-woo. God's not going to keep us all from getting sick. We're not all going to never get sick. No, that's not what I'm talking about. But I just encourage us. I think there's some truth to that. God is the healer. But are we astute? Give heed to his voice, to the voice of your God, and do what is right in his sight. Give ear to his commandments and keep all his statutes. I will put none of these diseases on you which I have put on the Egyptian, for I, the Lord, am your healer. I leave that with you to think about. You know, God made a statute with these people. God made a covenant with his people. He says that if you'll listen to me and you'll obey me. But again, what do we want to do? God bless me and then I'll obey you. God inspire me and then I'll be obedient. God, I'll make a deal with you. If you do this, then I won't do that anymore. You know? It doesn't work that way. God says, pay attention to me, keep my statutes, I will show you who I am. And that's his whole leading in what he wants to bring into these people before they go into the promised land. That's the whole process that he's in. And it's a process that's in our life. He says, act by faith, not by sight. Right? Act on the character and nature that you claim to believe God is. Act on it. Act on it. Be determined by it and see how that goes. I can't trust you, God. I don't believe in you. I don't know it. You haven't come through. You haven't done this. Or you think that's going to get you very far? It's called grumbling. Yeah. Let's pray. Because I want to acknowledge you, God, as is a merciful, compassionate, kind God who has been long-suffering and patient with me. I'm sure with all of us. I don't want to participate in rote religious acts. I think habitual holiness is a good thing. But habitual religious acts is a dangerous thing. Do we do these in order to get our affirmation and confirmation from men and those around us? Or do we live our lives to be affirmed, confirmed, right or wrong before you? Our singing should be an act of worship, not necessarily based on this huge emotional inspiration I feel, but based on obedience. You call us to sing. And you call us to sing truth, the truth of your word, the truth of your character, the truth of your history, the truth of what you've done. You call us to sing that, and singing is as much about my brothers and sisters as it is about, more so than about me. It's about blessing each other by our stumbling, bumbling voices maybe, but it's not what it's about. It's not what it's about. It's about producing the way that you cause it to be produced in us when we be inspired by truth, be inspired by gratefulness, to be inspired by thankfulness, to be inspired by your character and your nature, by your history, by what you've done. God, I ask that you would give us hope in that. Give us songs that we would be moved to sing together. Be moved to sing in a corporate way. Be moved to sing by ourselves. Be moved to sing in the shower. Be moved to sing as we're driving. That are honoring to you. Speak of the true character and nature of you, our God. Cause us to eradicate out of our lives those things which we've found acceptable because they were religious. Because they were accepted by people around us. Cause us to order our lives in a way that's acceptable to you and be able to share in that together. Because that's all of our hearts. Please guard and protect things that were said today, that it wouldn't be the ramblings of an old man, but that your truth would be heard and what isn't right or what isn't true would be questioned or come against. But God, please inspire us to order our lives in a way which truly honors you, in a way that is not hypocritical to our children. Because there's few things that we could do that's causing our children to stumble. And you don't speak well of that. Teach us what it means to be your people, what it means to be your church, what it means to corporately worship you, what it means to, as you drew the people out of Egypt, it wasn't just a matter of saving a bunch of individual yahoos, it was a matter of forming your people that corporately would bring honor to you. God, cause us to be that people. That's what we are in this valley. We're to be a corporate group of people that represent your character and your nature. Cause us to purify our hearts. Be willing to purify our hearts. Be willing to give up the love of this world. And be inspired by you. I know you want to inspire us. You made us that way. You made us to worship. You made us to sing and jump up and down and raise our hands. And you made us to. God caused us to do it for the right reasons. And to only to the true and living God. Thank you, Jesus, for making that possible. We have no hope without you. We have no hope without a Savior. And I thank you. Cause us to sing of you reducing our enemies and taking away the threat of our enemies because you are a warrior. And you killed their vehicles, you killed them. And they did not have to be threatened by the Egyptians and looking behind their back for the enemy. And I thank you that that's what you want to do in our lives. We'll be obedient. We'll shut our mouths, be silent, and move forward. Being obedient. Amen.